This is CliffCentral.com.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe leaders are made, not born. We also believe we can create a sustainable legacy by helping to develop tomorrow's leaders today. Which is why we have partnered with the Leadership Platform to nurture leaders who are committed to growing our country's economy.
We are proud to say it's an initiative that's already showing glittering results. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Right, leadershipplatform.com for all things leadership, two P's in the middle. As I said in the studio, Louis Groenewald, Alison Yandu, and soon to join us, Nadia Lantman, from Student Experience Manager at Open Window Institute. Their organization, I believe, are training individuals that are at the fringe of molding the context within which organizations function. So that's the conversation today. Our master lesson for the first half hour, and any questions are welcome, is the leader as the critical bridge between the context and their organization's followers, as well as their organization. So Theo Veldsmann, professor from UJ, he's going to share with us a couple of principles. Theo, kick us off. There's an organization, there's the organization's people, and there's a context. And you're saying the leader is the bridge continually between, I almost want to say, the outside world, the context, and the organization. Tell us some thoughts.
Thank you very much to Adrian and to the listeners as well. Yes, you introduced it very nicely, Adrian. Is the leader actually sits between the organization / followers and the context and acts as a bridge to mediate between what's happening in the context and the organization to help the followers to make sense and give meaning to. And I mean, in particular, if we look at the emerging new order of, it's been called VUCA, I prefer to call it VECAS, that talks about variety and interdependencies and complexities and change, ambiguity and seamlessness, is there's this world in chaos, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the leader then plays this role to help followers understand and in that way enable them and empower them to actually pursue the dream, to undertake the journey into the future, to make the legacy real. And there are a couple of roles that leaders can play. And in the, playing those roles, they actually build up what I would like to, and some other people have called, the psychosocial capital in the organization.
Okay.
Maybe that's enough for the moment.
For the moment. Okay, well, let's look at those. I mean, to build the bridge between the two, the leader must fulfill some contextual, you call it contextual engagement roles.
Role. Yes.
All right. So tell us, take us through those roles. And then Nadia has joined us from Open Window. Welcome, Nadia. Come very close to the mic. Very, very, very close, I say. You almost bite it.
No problem.
It's good to have you with us. She's going to give us context because in their world they are preparing people to, I think, to be on the fringe of creating this new context. So she's got some very interesting input that she can give. Take us through these roles and then Alice and Louis, Nadia, jump in.
Yes, in terms of, and I want to link them to the, because that's what leaders have to understand, if they mediate, is the, and being this bridge, the qualities of the context and what role it requires to deal with that quality. So the first one is variety, and the other word for that device, diversity, the multitude of choices, whether it's products, services, options of to go, that the leader is an architect. He must put the stuff, help them to put the stuff together like an architect would design a building.
Yeah.
And in that way, the people will feel trust. He will build up trust and empower the people to move ahead in that type of context. Because so, you've got all these building blocks, so to speak, and the leader now puts it together in some organized fashion such that followers can engage with that.
So the first contextual engagement role is architect. The contextual quality that what enhances, is that the right word?
Or engages with is variety,
diversity.
Yeah.
And the psychosocial capital built. It's a fancy word that for our simple leaders. What would you call that? But that's trust. You say that role builds trust.
It must build trust. So I feel now the confidence to go into this world because the architect, the leader's architect, has kind of mapped it out for me. And put it together in a way that I can. It's like landing up in a world that's confusing, and now the leader as the architect shows what the patterns are.
All right. And the next contextual engagement role
is that of where everything is interconnected, and now you have to get the dynamics right, the interactions between these different components. And here the leader plays the engagement role of a conductor. Like in a symphony orchestra, you've got all these different instruments, and to a piece of music, the leader must now guide them to play together. And there the capital that the leader would be building is that of harmony. That you can work harmoniously together, these different parties. Of course, included in that is just nowadays the interdependency of stakeholders. The third role is deals with complexity, understanding the complexity and make it simple. And here the role that the leader plays is for me a sage, the wise person. And in that sense, by being wise and helping to reduce the complexity to the essence, this is what we have to focus on. The less is more. The leader makes the followers feel confident, competent to actually deal with the context. Okay. Next one, and I think I'll have to push on, is change. And here the thing is, change brings is open-ended. There's an open-ended future, and here the leader, I believe, has to play the role of a prophet. I'm taking you into the future. There is a hopeful, and here the capital that you build is hope. There's hope. We've got a future, and we can make it work. Next one is, and here's an interesting one, is because what people need to do in this very confusing world is to create, have a vocabulary to be able to speak about the context. And here the role of the leader is that of a poet. And understand it the way I mean it, is give the people the language to actually describe the reality they have to deal with. And here it's about meaning and purpose. It's like reading a story about something. The leader puts stories together in the language that the people can use.
Politicians spin.
Spin is the bad one, is the downside.
It does come in.
Of course, in today's world.
Seamlessness of the world, boundaries have disappeared. Now, how do I find my way through the world? And there the leader plays the role of a guide, like he would take you through a museum or whatever. And here it's about giving the followers the courage and the faith to undertake the journey. And the final one is of sustainability. And here the leader plays the role of a steward. We care about what we're grappling with, and therefore instills the psychosocial capital of the stuff is what we're dealing with, the assets we're dealing with that have been entrusted is precious, and there's beauty in them. Look after them.
Wow, it sounds lady and gentlemen, like you have to be quite a perfect individual to be a leader today. To build that bridge between your organization and your people and the context out there, you have to be a pretty awesome individual. Theo, it's not easy. Or you aren't really saying the one individual must have these contextual qualities.
That's why I'm deliberately using the word not leader, but leadership.
All right.
So in the leadership
with your team.
With a team, you have to decide who's better at what role.
You have to be an architect or have an architect-type role in your team, conductor, sage, prophet, poet, guide, steward, and all those will hopefully result in a context, having contextual qualities as a team to deal with this bridge between the context out there in the organization.
And then build the capacity, and that's what I mean by the psychosocial capital. Build the capacity so that people can effectively, efficiently engage with the context.
And that capacity is trust, harmony, efficiency, or competency, hope, meaning and purpose, courage and faith, and preciousness and beauty.
Yeah.
Seeing something more in there anyway. Sure, Nadia, let's open window. I mean, we'll also talk a little bit more about open window in the second half of the show. It's a fascinating business. Certainly, geared for the world we live in today. Preparing youngsters to go out there with degrees and qualifications that can shape this contextual reality that we're talking about today. So you're here to give us a bit of context. In fact, I think we're going to explore five traits of the leader of the future in alignment to what Professor Theo Veldsmann just shared now, and then we can all jump in. Alice and Louis, any comments before Nadia gives us a little bit more context?
Yeah, lots of comments from me. The professor said a lot.
He did, eh?
and I just wish we had more time to unpack this, because I think obviously the first departure point in this sort of conversation always has to be around what do we mean by context? And as far as I can tell, I mean, you're talking about the environment in which the leader is executing whatever the plans that are in place. At the same time, he's mentioned a very important thing, change. which is often the problem in terms of how leaders exert themselves. Mm. I mean, we see what's happening in the context of, you know, our country at the moment, that there's such an impetus driving for change. But the question is, what happens when the leader who has to effect that change, you know, does not see the need for that change to happen? So I just would like at some point during this conversation for the prof to kind of drive us into the sort of actual examples in terms of contemporary situations.
But okay, prof, let that sink in.
Okay.
Right, simmer on it. Nadia, Louis, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I just want to mention, prof, you always add dimension to our own experience. We tend to measure good leaders by three principles, and you brought them out. The one is the ability they have to zero in on essences of situations, people, and challenges. Mm. Secondly, on the contextual relevancy. Mm. In other words, do they understand what the contexts are? Do they understand all the various stakeholders? Do they understand the fuller picture? Do they understand the ethics or all the values involved? Now, the third one is the situational confidence. So if we sense, this is subjective, yes, but we speak to leaders, you sense, do they have situational confidence, which we define as trust in processes that work. Mm. And you are just giving a lovely dimension to these principles. Thank you for that.
Okay, Nadia, I mean, you talk of transparency, flexibility, collaboration, empowerment, be the host, not the hero, and encouragement. Take us through that a bit, the energetic Nadia. Your thoughts on some of these. Come close there. Let's hear what you have to say.
Perfect. Thank you, Prof. I actually found this to be quite an exciting and a very relevant topic to our students. So
thank you.
Open Window is basically a private higher education provider having to provide or essentially build the leader of the future. So essentially, private higher education providers typically don't look at leadership as a skill that we need to empower our students with. So I've dug in and basically looked at a couple of areas to mirror the images and the types of scenarios that you've taken us through. So transparency being the first one, and this is basically aligning to the role of the steward, where essentially the leader of the future needs to have a very transparent mode of providing that vision to his team. Essentially, when a student leaves a private higher education provider, they typically have book smarts. So to have these softer skills in place to understand how you articulate a vision and a mission and all of these strategies to subordinates, and essentially we're looking at leaders being younger and younger and younger every year, where even some of our suppliers are actually in the age of like 22 years old, a CEO of a major company. So this is basically a very important point for me in terms of how leaders of the future, and especially a younger generation, work with their peers and also subordinates, team members, etc., to articulate that vision and to understand how to achieve it from that perspective. The second element that I looked at was flexibility. So this aligns to your role of change or the role of the prophet, technically. So this is also how a multitude of factors are changing the modern place of work. So essentially looking at technology, big data, and adapting that to a typical work day, understanding where you want to take your company, your firm, your institution, and how to take that forward. And essentially, the way or the progression in terms of these modern technologies makes it absolutely impossible to plan or to understand them intimately. So you need to actually trust your line management team to actually have those skills and to provide that guide to actually do that. So essentially, it does always take that almost Kaizen philosophy to always continuously improve and essentially be a scholar for life, which is something that a tertiary provider has a very big responsibility in playing. Because yes, we are providing a graduate, but essentially we want to create a thirst or a love for learning that is something that you continue to read, you continue to study your topics and actually do that on a daily basis.
Especially in today's world.
Yeah, if I may just come in, please. I would add the other two roles there of architect and conductor, because you spoke about the variety of resources that have to combined. And your architect actually and conductor helps for them to work harmoniously together. The architect indicates what's the relevant kind of material, building material, we want to use to build the kind of building we want to have.
Absolutely. Sorry.
In fact, the professor brings something I wanted to also mention here. The whole analogy of the bridge, I think, is very important. Because as far as I can tell, that bridge is continuously being built. It's never complete. Hence, I think Nadia's point of a perpetual scholar is very important. But it, again, kind of leads me to wanting to hear from the prof, perhaps. What is the best that the leader can do to acquire these sort of attributes that we talk about?
Can I just make a point? Somebody else has made the comment, and I can't recall the name now, which is quite relevant. He spoke about building the bridge as you're walking across it. And that's what the leader is actually doing, is building the bridge while you're walking across it.
You think you're building the bridge to end up at that point across the river, but in the end it moves there, and then it moves there. And that means I have to build it further and higher, and you have to adapt. Okay.
So it's a dynamic process, not a static structure that you put in place. And it actually exists in the minds of the people. Now, you've asked a very tough question, how do we build these things?
They're just born.
Nadia, I think you've made a very, and I think that's your philosophy. The typical philosophy of tertiary educations, educational institutions, is what I call it inside out. They start with what we can offer and what we think is best and how we put a qualification together. I think the whole philosophy should change from outside in. Look to the extent that you can, and you have to take educated guesses there, how the world will look in future. Profile, not at the content level, but the knowledge level, because that changes so rapidly, but the qualities of what you would need in the future. Then come back into your educational institution and say, this is the graduate we have to deliver.
And that's what makes Open Window such a dynamic institution. So I actually looked into a couple of these type of initiatives to look how to actually make these type of qualifications highly relevant. So in the role of the architect, as you actually described it now, in terms of actually indicating a way forward, Open Window has an incredibly interesting and a very exciting qualification around interaction design, which basically looks at providing an application for tools to make them highly relevant, highly usable, and also adapting technology to make it very easy for individuals to understand. So what was quite an interesting case study that was recently published is the gamification of technology in the workplace. So technically we're building leaders or, you know, filling candidates for jobs that don't even exist yet. And especially with the dynamic sense of the millennial student at the moment, you can't really put them in a traditional workplace and expect them to understand the values or the mechanisms that they need to drive. So essentially, items such as gamification are now being applied to traditional technologies such as ERP and CRM, where essentially candidates can even compete against each other from a sales perspective. So that changes the way that people work, and it also changes the way that the leader has to actually think of tools such as social media, how we collaborate, how we communicate with these individuals. Essentially, like 10 years ago, we were still sending fax or, you know, sending snail mail off. All of a sudden, we've actually migrated from email to sending each other tweets in the workplace.
And that's a fact.
Can I just come back, Adrian, to this question about how do you build these people? I think it's like anything. If you think of how I would approach it is to take these roles and try to distill it to the essence. What's the essence of an architect? An architect understands their building material and how it must be put together to build a beautiful building, a building in which people can live that will fit the environment. And the same with a leader, understanding the material that you have to work together given where you want to go to. The conductor must understand the piece of music, must understand the different parts. If we talk about a classical symphony orchestra, must understand the players and the strengths. And in this case, I would apply to the leader, who are the stakeholders? What are their needs and interests? And how do I combine them in such a way that they feel they fairly and equitably treated in a balanced fashion that we can jointly make good music together? So I think you can take each of the roles and ask the question, what language must the leader equip his people with to understand the world and speak appropriately?
Coming back to the ability to think essence, that's what Louis was saying earlier. If you're not able to think essence as a leader, then you won't arrive at the answers to these questions.
Arden, we're also getting to the stage of redefining leadership. You know, we kind of put it on the side as a separate category. Those days are past. Leadership is really doing exactly what we're saying. Now, what happens, technology is running way ahead of leadership. So we find there's a great deal of access to technology and data out there. But the ability to manage that and apply it, that's different. That's why, Nadia, we've discussed the role of a leadership institute. Everybody should become aware of these attributes. The day you can put your values to the side, that's gone. These must be integrated and part of your leadership profile. That's why we call it the first profession is leadership, and then your technical ability is secondary to that.
We're still building this perfect human being that must lead in today's world. You've got collaboration, empowerment. Just quickly give us a summary there, and we can pull it together.
Perfect. So collaboration basically looks at variety or the role of the architect. So essentially what this looks is essentially collaborating in the modern way of work. This comes down to a flatter management structure where we're basically looking at a symbiosis. We don't traditionally have that hierarchy anymore. Basically providing the different roles the ability to engage with leadership at different interactions, to actually understand what their role is in the bigger picture. The second one is basically empowerment, which aligns to your role of the sage, which basically takes the individual not just as an employee, but actually as a complete human being, taking into account their personal interests, their value systems, etc., and making sure that that actually aligns to the way that you would collaborate with that person. So it actually looks at an intrapersonal interpretation from the leader to understand not just what that person's job description is, but essentially how they would articulate that in the way that they work, things including discipline, how they would plan, prioritize, etc. And understanding that as a leader for me is essentially how you get your team to work together quite effectively.
Again, that ties for me to the role of the conductor.
Yes.
You know, directing.
Here's an interesting quote that just emerged out of this conversation. A leader builds a bridge into the future as he or she walks on the incomplete structure.
Very nice. Like that.
And in fact, I think there are instances in the world where that sort of building construction has to take place because you have, you know, these massive, you know, valleys and things that people have to traverse, but they don't have the technology. So I think what I take out of this conversation is that it's important for a leader to look at the context. And the context, as I said earlier, is the environment. Through the environment, you'll see all the elements that the professor has talked about. Whether you're talking about you being the conductor, you being the poet, life just calls for these sort of attributes. But you have to have that inspiration come through to you to be able to put yourself in that context.
Okay. Just to finish off the conversation for us there, Nadia.
Then the last little section that I basically looked at is, and that it ties into your sage message, but essentially be the host and not the hero. So this is something that I've also personally experienced, and I know that a lot of our graduates have actually stated that essentially the hero would typically be the person that works the hardest. You're the first in, the first out, essentially. But you would typically need to start trusting your team members to actually deliver on the requirements of the vision, because if there's buy-in and if there's change management throughout this process, essentially they will carry on because they believe in the larger vision. So be the host and not the hero basically means that we are taking the role of the guide and we're understanding how to actually take our team members and our future graduates and leaders of the world through this process in a systematic fashion and still getting to the end result, but essentially entrusting them with their roles and their responsibility and not necessarily having to always get the recognition that comes with that.
I mean, if you go to a museum, to just carry on with the analogy, you don't afterwards speak about the guide that took you through. You speak about your experiences you've had. And I saw the Mona Lisa and it had this impression. So the true guide and the sage disappear actually into the process of guiding people along. And it becomes their experience and their competence and their achievements.
Absolutely.
I have a question for Nadia. Since you are involved in training, you know, I would say particularly young people, you know, the leaders of the future, how do you think what's the importance of having this consciousness about the fact that there's perpetual change happening through life? How do you think that plays part in terms of shaping the mindset of the young people as they go through your training and into the world? That consciousness to realize that there's perpetual change taking place.
Well, I think the great thing that a lot of private higher education institutions are actually realizing, and especially something that's quite prominent within the open window, is collaboration with industry. So we need to understand the trends, the demands, essentially the change of everything from the economic environment to the type of product or service you'll manufacture, and essentially basically keep up with that process. So you can't just have one static qualification and assume that's going to be great for this year and the 20 years that come. So essentially institutions such practice OWI will continuously do impact studies. We will work with industry, understand what the changes are, what the trends, new technology, etc., and basically adapt the qualifications, expose our students to internships to basically get that hands-on experience where they're not a singular entity that walks out with a great qualification at the end of it, but they've got hands-on practical experience of actually doing the task, getting access to that mentors and leaders, and making them interested in continuously learning.
Yeah. Can I tie into this, Alison? I want to bring, Natalie, your points together. That's why I like what you call yourself open windows. You know, typical higher educational institutions are mirrors. They just show you the knowledge and you kind of want to see. A window implies that you can look ahead at the context, the environment. You've got perspective. And you must also be then party and look at how things are happening out there, which you must bring and incorporate. So it ties actually the two things very nicely together.
Thank you. Beautiful message.
Just, Professor, on that point, though, how do you think we should build the pipeline at the basic level? I'm thinking basic education, so as to make Nadia's life much easier. Yeah. Because you got to start early to be able to build people who have the capacity.
There's another bridge, isn't there? Because you guys find that the students are not necessarily prepared for what you're going to feed them. And you have to almost reintroduce them to the real world in the first year. Any university is a bit like that, I think. But Open Window, apparently, it's just a huge gap. When students get there, they have to be totally reorientated. We'll look a bit at that in the second half as well. Yeah.
I think there's a totally unexplored area there, although people are starting to touch it. I personally think we're starting, and I'm also into leadership development, we're starting way too late for developing our leaders. We're dealing with people 30, 40 years old that have been programmed to do things in a certain way.
Conditioned,
yeah. That's a better term, at a deep level. I think we should start at primary school already. Do the assessments, look at the potential. The little guy that's a physical big is a bully on the playground, but he's got very good leadership abilities, but he learns how to get his ways by bullying people. So it continues. He does it emotionally in the workplace, sometimes even physically.
Yeah.
If we could get that person right at primary school, we'd have had a brilliant leader. Now he derails or gets fired at a point later on in life.
Are we able to, if we really had to go listen to this podcast, or go watch it again if you're on Periscope or whatever, a heck of a lot of information, isn't it? It's good stuff. Quality information, quality conversation. But in the end, what kind of essence person are we looking at here? I mean, I know the normal way of summarizing would say high EQ, high SQ, high IQ, high social skills. It really is someone who is very balanced across. No one is going to be no one's going to have all these qualities and these abilities. Maybe anywhere in their lives, okay? Because we know you need a good team. But in essence, what kind of human being are we looking at here? If you're a CEO and you're looking at your younger pipeline, what signs are you looking for?
Okay, can I just jump in? Sorry, Professor. Yeah, I just think your question is very important, Arjan. But to answer it, I think you have to de-emphasize the individual, de-emphasize the person. Go back to the environment. Because the environment, the circumstances are what would shape your view as a leader of what you must do. And I think that's what we've been talking about, the context, the environment.
Yeah, but now the leader must look at the younger the pipeline down there and say, okay, which of these people are going to be groomed or are ready or look like they have the potential to be these sort of individuals?
From what environment do those people be coming from? So I think the environment is still the common denominator here.
Yep. Can I build on your point in a different way? If you don't know where you want to be in 5 to 10 years with your organization and understand the type of leadership profile of the leadership you need. And I deliberately use the word term here, not leader, leadership. I think one of the biggest competencies that leaders now must have is a diagnostic to understand the future. And, you know, of course, it's going to be different, but kind of understand the broad trends. Then profile the type of leadership they should have. And then be able to build up the portfolio in terms of the roles we've been discussing, that I've got all of these roles. I'm strong in one. I'm a strong architect, but I'm not very good guide.
But
who can be a guide?
But is there a risk, though, the Professor, where you entrust the leader to kind of mold or shape what kind of leaders come after them? These leaders, because they then look for the people that look like them.
your point again, which you've emphasized, go back to the context. The context must act as your point. Environment must act as your point of reference, not to clone people to come after me.
But I also think that if there's a role of mentorship, you can basically have a combination at certain levels or certain weightings of all of these skills. Some of them might be better equipped early on, and some of those you might develop in association with another leader in an institution. So essentially, I think if you look at a couple of basics, creative problem solvers, an ability to analyze and look at various types of data and understand what the path forward is, essentially all of those skills can be acquired and learned. You might be better at one or have a combination of one or two, but essentially a leadership team between them should be able to bounce off each other and say, well, I might be a better sage, but essentially Prof might be a better guide or an architect. And how do we utilize those leadership skills in unison to essentially deliver on the strategy?
Someone told me one day, I think it was maybe even Marco Tafani, who said, you look at your more junior leaders and who of them are good problem solvers? That's one of the signs of, okay, because if you're a good problem solver in the current context, then hopefully you can take those skills in the next 5 years to whatever the context is then and still solve problems. There are other attributes you should have, obviously. I just wonder which companies know, Theo, where they're going in 5 years. So to try and plot where we're going, the world changes so dramatically that you almost need adaptable, flexible, coming back to the skills, Nadia, you were talking about. Those are it's almost it's flexible skills. It's almost a fluid skills that you should have that take you into the future.
I think it's real time. I think it's also at the level of where you actually don't go to the specifics, but go for the deeper stuff. I think, Nadia, that's what you're saying, such that will equip you. If you want to play soccer, it doesn't matter which league you want to play in. There are essential skills that you need to have. Of course, if you play in the top range, then you have to have it should be more sophisticated, but the skills remain essentially the same.
I think, you know, how many companies know where they're going 5 years? I think there are clear examples. I mean, if you look at SpaceX, for example, you know, Elon Musk, he's making moonshots, and you know, everyone that kind of looks at what he's doing thinks he's crazy. But
you're taking a real outlying company example.
That's what, you know, the Googles of the world have also done.
Yeah, but you see, we're working on a very false assumption here. And that is that the old mode of thinking about the future is you start in the present and you extrapolate into the future. The companies of the future are the companies that are going to create the future. Mm. They'll start with the future they want to see and come back to the present and say, what do we need to do to get? And that's what Apple is doing. And this is what Musk is doing.
Exactly what they're doing. Good point there.
They redefine the future, and then suddenly you haven't got any game to play. You're out of the game.
And that's the weirdest thing, is that the world is moving faster than ever before, yet we require of leaders to go into the future and see what they want. Why? Because really, with technology and all those things at our disposal, we can actually do almost anything. You get the feeling that you can, you know, what you can do is limited by your creative thinking and potential. It's not a question of you can't do anything these days. With virtual reality, you can go all over the world. I mean, you can't limit your thinking anymore. So dream what you want, then come back. Very good point. Let's close off this part of the Leadership Masterclass with comments.
This should go on, and this is good.
There's just some final comments. I'm going a little bit into the second conversation because it's important. Nadia, final comments. Louis, Alice, Theo, let's just sort of round up.
Perfect. I think basically just to summarize basically what Prof has also just said, and just ending up with what your last sentence was essentially, Audron, is looking at equipping private higher education providers to be a little bit more dynamic and forward thinking. And essentially we are in a place where we can rapidly answer these type of demands from industry. So things such as micro qualifications, etc. If a new skill is required now, or sharpening up on those leadership skills, essentially we are equipped to be able to address them almost instantaneously with online short courses, etc. So I think we're at a very exciting time in education, kind of flipping the model on its head, understanding that, you know, this is the demand from market, and let's do it.
And you can't take a year or two or three to approve and finalize a curriculum. And
3 years, Adrian, 3 years.
Yeah, that's crazy. You cannot do that anymore. Things must be real time now, on the button. Louis, the old man.
Arden, briefly, leadership should be our first profession. You can't jump leadership. You can't do the things we spoke today if you don't have a passion for leadership, that which drives all things. If you become a functional leader, it's not good enough. You must become a leader first, and then use your functional ability to achieve your goals.
Alice?
I think at the institutional level, as well as at a personal level, leadership is about one core thing, and that's success, driving success. And I was listening yesterday to someone who's published 13 books and all of them New York Times bestseller. And someone asked, so what is the secret? And he said, in this time in which we live with technology and everything else, the secret is that there's no secret. That's the answer. So I think also leaders need to understand that there is no secret, but you just have to do what you are required to do within the context in which you frame how you execute.
Okay, Theo, final word.
Yes, I just want to introduce it completely from the other side. We started with the roles and leaders building the bridge. You can, of course, invert it the other way to assess organizations. How much of the psychosocial capital that I've mentioned, like hope, like competence, like preciousness, courage, and faith,
trust,
and trust, does the organization have? Do the organization have? And then say, but are these roles fulfilled, yes or no? How much capital have you built up?
All right. Okay, next up, we're going to take a short break, and the next up is a general conversation around the changing demand of higher education. A disruptive approach is needed with Dr. Mario Landman, also from the Open Window team. So stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.